From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. Have you ever seen someone crying in public? Maybe they're in their car and you're sitting at a stoplight and you see them crying. Maybe you're on a bus. Have you ever found yourself crying, maybe while jogging in the park or you're making dinner? Well, turns out sadness happens all the time. And author Brandon Stosi has been watching people cry everywhere he goes in New York. So he started tweeting about it, not realizing that it would actually go viral. So he's put together a book of essays from dozens of folks. It's called Sad Happens, A Celebration of Tears. And we're lucky enough to have Brandon here today to talk more about it. Brandon, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So I'm curious, Brandon, when did you start noticing people crying in New York? And you say it's pretty much everywhere you went.
I noticed, I noticed before the pandemic. So I remember there was a time during the pandemic where I didn't know any better and I was jogging with a mask on thinking it was somehow helping the situation. And so this was long before that. So I would say, 2017 or somewhere in there, I was just one day jogging, jogging towards someone and saw them crying. And I thought, oh, I wonder what they're crying about. And I think it's one of those things where once you notice something, you kind of are more aware of it when it happens again. So it doesn't just like sneak past you. So I spotted a couple other people. Then I realized that I myself would cry now and then while jogging, if I was listening to music or, thinking about something, or sometimes just being struck by, I'm running, it's early in the morning, the sun's coming up, the light is shining on the New York City skyline, and you're kind of moved by that, like this kind of cinematic moment. So that was when I noticed it. And then I just kept track of it and started jotting it down.
So what made you decide to start tweeting about the people you saw?
Well, first I thought it was just interesting that somebody, sometimes for me, like tweets remind me of when I was a teenager and I had a zine, and you kind of would just write down these thoughts that came to you quickly. And I feel like the best tweets are often the ones that are just not overthought and just kind of spur of the moment. And so I just observed this person. And I said, saw a guy crying while jogging kind of thing. And then once I did that, all these people started responding, oh yeah, that was me, or I cry when I jog too. Like this kind of, I noticed it resonating. So for me, it was just like a quick observation just to kind of jot out there and, press send and put it out into the world.
Did you notice more men crying or, more women crying? Was it, 50-50? What did that look like?
In the jogging scenario, it was more men. And I think in general, I saw more men crying. And initially I was using just the term guy, because the first few people I saw were men. And then I kind of liked just kind of keeping it this sort of standard, almost like this every man kind of situation, or just kind of this just like open character, like, hey, maybe this is the same person crying in all these tweets. So I always kind of just kept it guy, no matter what the gender was after a while. But at first it was men crying. And then I just kept it that way because I liked it being repeated over and over and over again, almost like this kind of long, nonstop poem or something like that. This just kind of a guy. And even the way that I put my selection into the book was basically like a long poem of all these tweets. And yeah, I liked the echo of that. But I'd say I saw more men crying.
And you talked about, you started noticing this when you were jogging, like in the morning. What kinds of other places did you notice this? Or was it strictly kind of, in those mornings when you're out running?
I would notice it in airports. Notice it in a lot of I wouldn't say restaurants, but like kind of like a bagel shop or something like that, like a more informal dining space, I guess. Notice it at shows, like if I would go see a band play or something like that, you'd see people crying. I feel like that's a fairly common spot, especially like, back to the Beatles or something, but now to the present, like Taylor Swift or something, people get really excited and they're seeing this person they care about or this song that means a lot to them. But yeah, a lot of airports, a lot of places where people come and go, like maybe, the subway stop or on the subway, I think people cry a lot because people, I think similarly to jogging, when you're on the subway, maybe sometimes you're kind of just sitting and thinking about stuff and you're kind of removed from the everyday a bit. It's kind of like this passage from one place to another. So I noticed subways. There was one, like the one tweet that really kind of took off was I saw this person on the subway crying and, they stopped crying, took a selfie and smiled like this kind of, and then, when they were done, they just started crying again. And it was this kind of thing of like this removal of the situation and here I'm happy, maybe sending a photo like, hey, yeah, Everything's okay here. And then just going back to crying again.
So I know you decided to you know, kind of put a book together. Where did that idea, you know, start happening? Where did that come from to kind of collect stories, frankly, short essays from people?
Right. And initially, you know, someone reached out to me that had a small poetry press, and they said, you know, these tweets are kind of like poems. Would you ever think about like putting out a chapbook or kind of a book of these as poems? And I thought, that's interesting. And I kind of thought about it. I reached out to my friend Rose Lazar, who's an illustrator and who I'd known for many, many years, since we lived in Buffalo like 20 years ago or around that, you know, around that many number of years ago. And I hit her up and said, hey, would you want to illustrate kind of a series of these tweets that I've been doing? And I mentioned it to my friend Matt Berenger, who's in the band The National. And he said, hey, this is a really interesting idea. Could I contribute to it? So he kind of misunderstood, I think, when I first brought it up and thought I was putting together a collection. And I was like, that's actually a good idea. And I think sometimes, yeah, the best ideas are misunderstandings. So then I said, sure, write something, Matt. So then Matt wrote something. Then he said, you know, we should ask Phoebe Bridgers to do something. And this was, you know, before Phoebe Bridgers had taken off as much as she has now. So we're like, all right, cool, let's ask her. So she wrote something. So suddenly I'm like, all right, I have my tweets, something from Phoebe Bridgers and something from Matt Berenger. And then I thought, you know, this could be something bigger, but I don't want it to be all musicians. And so maybe I should reach out to someone who's a filmmaker or a comedian, and just kind of kept expanding in that way. So it happened pretty organically. And then we reached a point where I thought, you know, we have a lot of people that would have what people might think of as like creative jobs, like someone who's a journalist or, you know, this or that. And I thought, what if we just have, you know, people too, like have everyday jobs that, you know, like they clock in, clock out, and maybe do other stuff outside that job, but their job to them, they don't see as a creative outlet necessarily. So I kind of opened up my DMs on Twitter and said, hey, if, you know, if you have a job that brings you in contact with tears, please hit me up. And, you know, I'm working on a book. And so that's how we got people who worked in funeral homes, and someone who worked at a vintage clothing store, a zookeeper, and just kind of really became a much broader collection of different kinds of voices and people in the book. And that's just how it kept going. Eventually I was like, I asked my agent who had sold the books, I thought he should be in there. And I asked Rose, I asked my kids, and just kind of started getting to a huge number of people. And my goal at one point was, I thought, okay, we've made it past 100. Let's just get to 115. And then I think the book's done. And I asked Rose to contribute something, realizing she hadn't written anything. And she did. Then I counted it up and she was 115. So like, all right, cool, we can like finish it now. We've included everyone that somehow participated in the book, and there's enough of a variety of people that have contributed.
So what did you learn from reading all of these essays? Because, you know, just, I mean, the title of the book, That Happens, you know, A Celebration of Tears. Is every story in there, though, about sadness? Or were there, you know, stories of really, I mean, celebration? I mean, look, if you are a regular listener of this show, I am a crybaby. It is ridiculous how much I cry. I cry when I'm happy. I cry when I'm sad. I cry when I'm mad. I mean, and I wish that it wasn't like that, but I almost have like no control over it.
Yeah. What I noticed was that it wasn't very hard for people to come up with like moments of when they cried. Like my prompt was pretty simple. Just, hey, tell me about a time you cried. And that was basically it. But yeah, there's a variety of crying in here. And that's why on, you know, the cover, it's these hands gathering these kind of rainbow colored tears. And you know, some of the tears in the book are happy, some are relief, many are sad. But yeah, there's all kinds of tears. I mean, there's one in there where Sarah Quinn from Tegan and Sarah contributed about her partner, you know, them working for a while for her to get pregnant and then finally having this pregnancy. And it's interesting, you know, she sent me that one and said, hey, this isn't public yet, so, you know, don't mention it. And I said, don't worry, you know, book publishing is so slow that this, I'm sure this child will exist long before this book is out. And then the day we were actually going to announce the book, finally, she announced publicly that, you know, her partner was pregnant. And so there's that kind of sort of tears of joy and relief. There's tears of, you know, my own son who's, well, now he's 10 going on 11, but when he wrote his thing for the book, he was 9 or 8, I guess. His piece is about the Buffalo Bills losing a game to the Chiefs. So his is sadness over sports, you know, and how he goes to sleep crying because they lose, you know, with 13 seconds left and they tie the game. The Chiefs tie the game. They lose in overtime. Then he wakes up the next morning and he's still crying. And that's very true. You know, he woke up and he said, did they really lose dad? I said, yeah. And he starts crying again. So there's that kind of sadness. Or my other son wrote about the last day of school before realizing schools are going to be shut down for COVID for, so he cries because he's about to go to middle school the next year and realizes he might not see some of those kids again, is the way he puts it in there. So there's that kind of sadness. So I think that's the thing I realized, is there's just so many kinds of sadness in there and so many overlaps and so many different kinds of tears. And it's been interesting to me to see the ones that people really react to, you know, the one with the zookeeper and sort of having animals in your care and having them pass. Like, so many people have brought that up to me, like, oh, you know, broke my heart when this owl that the zookeeper cared about dies, you know, and she has to deal with the loss of an owl. So yeah, I think I just realized people cry, and people cry for so many different reasons. And it's been interesting to see just how the book has resonated with people and the number of people who've written and then shared their own stories that aren't in the book, but hey, here's this thing that happened to me. Or when we've done readings, people who come up to Rose and I at the readings and tell us their stories and just want to share. It opens up a lot, I think. Once you read this many stories of this many kinds of tears, you're just like, all right, I'm going to share my story too.
Yeah. So one of the first essays, I mean, you talk about the zookeeper, but one of the first essays is about taking a cat to the vet. Can you talk to us a little bit about that essay? Because again, there is something I think that resonates with people when you do talk about animals and they're vulnerable and you're their caretaker.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think I'm surprised in a way that there weren't more essays about people losing pets or losing animals in some way. But I think that is something, there's certain themes that come up a lot. And that's certainly one of them, where you're losing a loved one, which is a pet in your care. And yeah, this vulnerability where a pet isn't able to kind of maybe articulate exactly what's going wrong with it. Whereas you can with a child, you know, like I was saying with the story my son wrote, I can say, hey, what's, you know, you're sad about this, we could talk about it. A pet, there's a little bit of, a little bit of unknowing. And we've had our own experience where we had a cat who's very, very old. And just that kind of moment where suddenly you say, hey, his name was Otis. So you're like, Otis, something is wrong with him. And realizing, you know, he's basically having a stroke or needing to be put to sleep. And that kind of, in our own situation, that happened, it happened late at night. And so our kids woke up the next day and we had to explain to them what happened. And we realized how these things have huge ramifications. Then for a while, our one kid would always be afraid. He always needed to say goodbye to everything because he was like, I basically went to sleep and this cat died. And then I woke up and the cat was gone. And so every time we'd leave for work, you'd have to be like, mom, dad, mom, like just kind of this whole needing to say goodbye. And then we realized, maybe we should have woken them up and had them say goodbye to Otis. But our call was like, well, he looked pretty scary because he wasn't the same cat anymore when you reached that point. But yeah, so all those things, these things, reading these, when I was editing the book, there were multiple pieces where suddenly I'd start crying. So like, you know, you have your own overlaps in your life. Or we have a dog, Pete, who's now 7. So he's a young enough dog. But my wife has pointed out, wait a second, Pete's going to be old the second our older kid heads out and goes to college. She's like, I'm going to be a wreck around that time if everything happens at once. But yeah, I think you just realize the presence of this, like there's these, every day there's so much beauty in life and there's like a couple steps away from tears, you know?
Well, so when, as you mentioned, like you were, you know, putting the book together and you would start crying. I mean, sometimes was it also, I mean, I find myself, I'll cry watching a TV show. I'll cry, you know, reading a passage in a book. And it's not that I'm necessarily sad. I think what it is it's almost like you can feel that sadness coming off of other people. And it's almost like you take it on yourself, if that makes sense. I mean, so was there some of that for you even putting the book together?
For sure. Yeah. I think there's that thing too, where, yeah, I think when you see someone else cry, it's kind of, I mean, it's very different, but it's a similar thing in some ways where someone yawns and suddenly you yawn. And it's not that though. It's like, I think when you see someone else being emotional or read about someone else being emotional, it's suddenly you start crying yourself. Like I've done things where like, I'm telling my wife a story and then she starts looking like she's ready to cry. Then I'm like, wait a second, now I'm getting ready to cry. And I think there's like that kind of thing where you suddenly, it's like contagious. But I think it is, you see, I'm trying to remember now there's something we watched recently with the kids, and I don't even remember what it is now, where someone's talking about a kid who's died, and then a teacher starts crying about it. And when they mentioned that, then suddenly I started crying. I was like, oh God. And I didn't even see, you know, it's something I was just kind of half paying attention to. But yeah, I think when people show vulnerability, it's contagious a bit. And then you yourself feel that. And we've had multiple readings where someone's telling a story and reading their story and people start crying. And you know, Rose's stories in the book, the illustrator, one is about her father dying while he's overseas, and one is about like her relationship with her mother and her love for her mother. And she's like, I'm gonna get through these without crying, and she did. But then like during the next story someone else is reading, like once she finishes hers and she like sat down in the bookstore, then she starts crying. You know, so I think there's that kind of thing where I think people, once you share and open up, it's and you see other people crying, it's easy to kind of let yourself go too. And yeah, I don't know why exactly the psychology of it, but it feels like it becomes this communal thing. Yeah, this collection of tears. But I also think it's easier to cry when there are other people crying. Like there was a point where a newspaper wanted to excerpt from the book and have like three or four selections, and a couple people were like, you know, I'd rather not have mine be removed in that way because it felt a little too naked for them, I think, where suddenly it's just like three or four people stories of crying. They felt much better being insulated in the book where there's so many other ones. And I think that communal aspect to it was appealing to them, and they didn't want to be highlighted as like, here's this one piece of this person crying.
How cathartic was it for you to be able to put something out in the world where it really is, okay to cry? And I ask that question because I think in particular within our culture in the United States, there isn't enough space, I think, for men and boys to be able to cry, let alone even have a lot of a lot of positive emotion, right? And
Right.
so what's kind of been the feedback on that part of it?
Yeah, I think it's been amazing to make something that feels useful and that people have reached out to and told their stories or felt like they have a safe space to kind of open up and discuss. And I think it's just been amazing to make something that feels like it's resonating and that is inspiring other people to kind of yeah, shift the way maybe they think about tears. Like I had a friend that I lost touch with from high school, but even earlier. And he's now he, you know, I live in New York and he's living in the South. And I'm, you know, a writer and he's a police officer. And he hit me up and he was like, yeah, I read your book. And I was thinking to myself that I don't really cry very much. And he's like, but then I thought about it. He's like, I cried at my grandmother's funeral because she had asked me to sing a Travis Tritt song, and I cried here when this happened. He's like, and suddenly I realized I cry all the time, and that I sort of came to that realization when reading your book, and initially thinking I hadn't cried. So I think that kind of stuff has been great. It just opens up these conversations, maybe makes people get in better touch with themselves, and also just brings people together in a way that I think has been good to see. And like people who contributed to the book share stories with me about folks who reached out to them, someone who mentioned to me they were kind of at this conference, and someone else had, you know, lost a parent the way they had, and they'd read the book and they had this conversation about that. It became very cathartic for both of them. So yeah, I think the fact that it feels like it's not just a book that you open it and close it and it's done, but the fact that it seems to be expanding and people are contributing their own stories to it, and it's yeah, helping other things grow, other kinds of folks just come to terms with their own stories, and it just keeps expanding. That's what's exciting about it to me, is that it feels like it's out in the world and people are kind of doing things with the book. And there's been folks that have even put on their own readings where some people in Seattle decided to like gather, and one person was in the book, and otherwise a bunch of other people just came and wrote their own stories about crying. So that stuff is great. It feels like it's really engendering like sort of a lot of a conversation and yeah, good catharsis.
So what kind of advice do you have for folks, if any, who might see someone crying in public? And because I'll tell you, my dad passed away almost 23 years ago, and I would find myself, like, honestly, I have very vivid memories of like being at the grocery store, and all of a sudden I just start sobbing, right? And
Right.
it's not like I was feeling sad at that moment. I think it's part of the grieving process. And I remember people like literally backing away, right? Like, because it can be really uncomfortable. I think for people to see that.
Yeah, I think it's, I feel like it's case by case. There's definitely times, you know, I was, when I first started observing people crying, I never really asked why they were crying. And that's kind of one of the things that inspired the book, really, was the idea of, well, why are these people crying? Like, why is there some guy crying in the JFK bathroom? Why is there like somebody, you know, eating a fruit salad and crying? Like, what are they thinking about? It can't be like the fruit salad. It can't be, there's got to be more to it. And so part of the book was that. And I think I'm pretty bad at approaching people who are crying or approaching people because, you don't know why they're crying. And it could be just like tip of an iceberg. And suddenly you're like, you know, yeah, you might make things worse. So it's, I think it's hard, but I think you can tell, you know, I've seen, if it's a child, I've seen kids crying, you know, hey, is your mom or dad or that kind of thing? And trying to like, maybe they're lost, like those kinds of tears. But adults, yeah, it is much harder. It's harder to know how to deal with that. I think my wife is much better at that. She's much more willing to like take that step. And then, you know, if you realize warning signs, then she'll like get away quickly. But yeah, it's hard to know. And I've had that too, where I feel like even now, I think it's perfectly okay to cry in public. But if something suddenly moves me, I will often try to like somehow like stare off into the distance, you know, try to get like regain that composure. Like, all right, I got to like get rid of these tears here. If you're in a space,
yeah, I got to get it together.
Exactly. Yeah. She's like, all right, what are these people going to think is going on here? You know, so that kind of thing. But yeah, it is difficult. And I think that's why one of the things I liked about the book is people just kind of discussing what does bring them tears. And one thing that was interesting is many people in the book are friends and they told me stories I didn't even know. You know, like one of my friends in the book talks about her mother dealing with dementia. That's something I didn't even know. And so the fact that this is the story she shared, I was like, all right, I didn't know this. And now I do know this. And I know a little bit more about you from your contribution here. But, you know, I agree. It's hard to just go up to someone you don't know and say, hey, excuse me, why are you crying?
I would say maybe just don't have a look of utter terror in your eyes.
I think empathy. Yeah, you can look on with some empathy, but not like, utter terror is definitely not the way to go. Unless someone's completely howling, you know, maybe that's.
Then that might be different. Yeah. Yeah. So, but before I let you go, I mean, what are you hoping that people take away from this book? Because it sounds like people have taken so much away from this. And I would think it's probably touched you in a way that you didn't expect.
Yeah, I think what I hope is, people can see something in there, maybe be willing to, you know, like my friend who was like, oh, I never cried. And he's like, well, actually, I do cry. I think even just having that self-awareness is something I hope for, and that maybe it allows people to have conversations about things that they cry about. And again, like you were saying early on, not all tears have to be sad. There's definitely like tears of joy and tears of excitement and tears of relief. And, you know, my one kid is a nice hockey goalie, and that's a very stressful position for a parent. And I feel like when they won their last game of the year and he did an amazing job, my wife and I both definitely cried. That was like tears of triumph. You know, there's that kind of thing. And just like, wow, this kid pulled this off. And so I think just having the ability to not be ashamed of crying. There's like a lot, enough reasons to cry in the world that are good and bad. And I think just like embracing it and being good with it and being able to talk about it and seeing, you know, if you don't see yourself in the book, maybe like write your own story. And then, that's been a great thing. People just sending their stories to me. Yeah. So people sharing their stuff with me has been amazing and eye-opening and a really beautiful thing.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking time today to talk with us about this. I really appreciated the conversation.
Yeah, thanks.
We've been talking with Brendan Stosi. He's the editor of the book, Sad Happens, A Celebration of Tears. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.